You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
All right, a lot of news being made over the weekend. In the Shangri-La dialogue that has been going in Singapore. So, I think giving the keynote address was India's Prime Minister. His name is Modi. And then... also, whenever he's on the list of speakers, somebody who gets a lot of attention is the United States Secretary of Defense. I don't know of a man who has more credibility in this administration than Jim Mattis. And one is he's a CENTCOM. He already knew a lot of people in the in the Middle East. His time in the Pacific, he obviously knew. People in the Pacific, and so people knew of him as a commodity. So he went there with great respect, and I think he's done nothing but increase whatever respect that people had for him to begin with, by virtue of the way that he is in a very businesslike fashion, which is very much his style, not prone to bloviating and grandiose statements, but prone to sound, decisive action, the way that he has put really probably the administration's best foot forward in very difficult circumstances, whether they be in the Middle East or in the Pacific, very measured, very deliberate in his words. And so any time that he's on the list of speakers, you will certainly see a lot of attention. Also, in addition to that, the subject is obviously China. Okay, the subject is China and the recent, it seems like, uptick in the militarization of, or at least the path to some kind of confrontation in the South China Sea. So China continues to increase its rhetoric relative to a whole series of events. They seem to be somewhat cooperative, maybe, and I'm not even sure about that, relative to North Korea. They are antagonistic relative to the South China Sea and the East China Sea, where they have disputes with Japan and Taiwan. Those two countries are very nervous of China's future actions. So, with all that kind of spooling about, Secretary Mattis headed to Shanghai over the weekend. And we played his comments last year, so I thought it would be appropriate that we play them again. So here in his own words, talking about the region and the defense challenges in the region, is Secretary Mattis. He's being introduced by the moderator. So, here you have it.
Indo-Pacific security, and we're delighted, of course, for the second year running to have the Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, address us in this opening plenary. As all of you know, he is an advocate of strong defense. As a soldier, he knows the brutality of war and the effectiveness of a well-trained military machine. As a thinker, he knows that strategy is vital and its development and consistent application important. And as a warrior, he knows the value of alliances. He has been an expert advocate of the arts of defense diplomacy, understanding that engagement with political and military leaderships internationally is important for the United States. Of the many aphorisms for which he's famous, one of the ones I like the most is his injunction to soldiers to engage your brain before you engage your weapon. And so it is with very great pleasure that I invite Jim Mattis to engage his brain with us today. Jim Mattis, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you, John. Good morning, excellencies and fellow ministers, military officers, and thank you to IISS and, of course, to Singapore, probably the most gracious and competent of hosts we could find anywhere in the world. It's an honor to come before you for the second time as the Secretary of Defense at the Shangri-La Dialogue, which I consider the best opportunity for senior officials to meet, share perspectives, and reinforce the significance of a free and open Indo-Pacific region, and in particular to speak to how we will work together to sustain that vision. Last year, I came here principally to listen. I was new in office, and I needed to do a lot of listening, and I have visited this region six times since then, and my listening has confirmed for me the high degree of commonality among the nations in this very diverse region. Today, I come to share the Trump administration's whole of government Indo-Pacific strategy, which espouses the shared principles that underpin a free and open Indo-Pacific. For as Prime Minister Modi reflected last night, a commitment to common values must be a foundation, or even the foundation, upon which we build a shared destiny. Standing shoulder to shoulder with India, ASEAN, and our treaty allies and other partners, America seeks to build an Indo-Pacific where sovereignty and territorial integrity are safeguarded, the promise of freedom fulfilled, and prosperity prevails for all. In firm support of this vision, America has recently released national security and national defense strategies, express the Trump administration's principled realism. They take a clear-eyed view of the strategic environment, and they recognize that competition among nations not only persists in the 21st century, in some regard it is intensifying. Both strategies affirm the Indo-Pacific is critical for America's continued stability, security, and prosperity. America's Indo-Pacific strategy is a subset of our broader security strategy, codifying our principles as America continues to look west. In it, we see deepening alliances and partnerships as a priority. ASEAN's centrality remains vital, and cooperation with China is welcome wherever possible. And while we explore new opportunities for meaningful multilateral cooperation, we will deepen our engagement with existing regional mechanisms at the same time. In the early years of our republic, President Thomas Jefferson sought to establish America's presence in the Pacific Northwest, the part of the country where I later grew up. President Jefferson anticipated this coastal region of America would become a gateway to the Pacific and open up vast opportunities for increased trade and commerce. America has expanded its engagement and deepened its connectivity across the region ever since. So make no mistake, America is in the Indo-Pacific to stay. This is our priority theater. Our interests and the regions are inextricably intertwined. Our Indo-Pacific strategy makes significant security, economic, and development investments, ones that demonstrate our commitment to allies and partners in support of our vision of a safe, secure, prosperous, and free Indo-Pacific based on shared principles with those nations, large and small, ones who believe their future lies in respect for sovereignty and independence of every nation, no matter its size, in freedom for all nations wishing to transit international waters and airspace, in peaceful dispute resolution without coercion, in free, fair, and reciprocal trade and investment, and in adherence to international rules and norms that have provided this region with relative peace and growing prosperity for the last decades. To these principles, America is true in both word and deed. In our economics, we seek fair competition. We do not practice predatory economics, and we stand consistent with our principles. The U.S. strategy recognizes no one nation can or should dominate the Indo-Pacific. For those who want peace and self-determination, we all have shared responsibility to work together to build our shared future. As we look to that future, our Indo-Pacific strategy will bring to bear U.S. strengths and advantages, reinvigorating areas of underinvestment. This morning, I'd like to highlight several themes of our strategy. First, expanding attention on the maritime space. The maritime commons is a global good, and sea lanes of communication are the arteries of economic vitality for all. Our vision is to preserve that vitality by helping our partners build up naval and law enforcement capabilities and capacities to improve monitoring and protection of maritime borders and interests. Second, interoperability. We recognize that a network of allies and partners is a force multiplier for peace. Therefore, we will ensure that our military is able to more easily integrate with others. This applies to both hardware and software by promoting financing and sales of cutting-edge U.S. defense equipment to security partners and opening the aperture of U.S. professional military education to more Indo-Pacific military non-commissioned officers and officers. Through our security cooperation, we are building closer relationships between our militaries and our economies, all of which contributes to enduring trust. A third theme is strengthening the rule of law, civil society, and transparent governance. This is the sunlight that exposes the malign influence that threatens sustainable economic development. Our defense engagements reinforce this theme. Whether our professional military education or combined military exercises or in the day-to-day interactions between our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen and the armed forces from across the region. A fourth theme is the private sector-led economic development. The United States recognizes the region's need for greater investment, including in infrastructure. We are reinvigorating our development and finance institutions to enable us to be better, more responsive partners. U.S. agencies will work more closely with regional economic partners to provide end-to-end solutions that not only build tangible products, but also transfer experience and American know-how so growth is high value and high quality, not empty promises and surrender of economic sovereignty. The U.S. stands ready to cooperate with all nations to achieve this vision. While a free and open Indo-Pacific is in all our interests, it will only be possible if we all pull together to uphold it. To protect shared principles, we will continue partnering with the existing regional institutions. Central among these, of course, is ASEAN and the institutions it created, such as the ASEAN Regional Forum, the ASEAN Defense Minister Meeting Plus, and the East Asia Summit.
Let me just tell you what ASEAN is, for those of you who don't know. It's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Headquartered in Jakarta, Indonesia, right? Members are Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines, Myanmar or Burma, Cambodia, Laos, and Brunei. Okay, so when he's referring to ASEAN, you're hearing it, and Australia is also a member. So back to Secretary Mattis.
As well as the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum and trilateral and multilateral mechanisms of like-minded partners. A central element of our strategy is strengthening of our alliances and partnerships in terms of mutual benefit and trusted relationships. We are committed to working by, with, and through allies and partners to address common challenges, to enhance shared capabilities, to increase defense investment where appropriate, to improve interoperability, to streamline information sharing, and to build networks of capable and like-minded partners. In Northeast Asia, the dynamic security environment continues to underscore the importance of our robust alliance and partner relationships. On the Korean Peninsula, we hold the line with our allies, supporting our diplomats who lead this effort. Our objective remains the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And the international community is in alignment here, as evidenced by multiple unanimous United Nations Security Council resolutions. Beyond North Korea, we are focused on modernizing our alliances with both the Republic of Korea and Japan, transforming these critical alliances to meet the challenges of the 21st century. The Department of Defense remains steadfastly committed to working with Taiwan to provide the defense articles and services necessary to maintain sufficient self-defense consistent with our obligations set out in our Taiwan Relations Act. We oppose all unilateral efforts to alter the status quo and will continue to insist any resolution of differences accord with the will of the people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait. In Southeast Asia, we have reinvigorated our long-standing alliances with the Philippines and Thailand, while bolstering our enduring partnership with Singapore. At the same time, we are seeking to develop new partnerships with pivotal players across the region, such as Indonesia, Malaysia, and Vietnam, where we have made historic progress based on shared interest and mutual respect. We continue to support ASEAN's centrality in the regional security architecture and seek to further empower it. The more ASEAN speaks with one voice, the better we can maintain a region free from coercion, one that lives by respect for international law.
Okay, every time that he says coercion, just substitute China in there, okay?
In Oceania, our alliances and partnerships are based not only on common security interests, but also on deeply shared values and a long history of shared sacrifice. Australia remains one of our strongest allies, and this year we celebrate our first 100 years of mateship. We are also revitalizing our defense partnership with New Zealand, and we modernize these key alliances and partnerships to ensure that they are as relevant to the security challenges of this century as they were to the last. Our strategy also recognizes the importance of the Pacific Islands, America's gateway to the Indo-Pacific, and a region where we are stepping up our engagement. The President's budget made good on our long overdue promise to fund our compact of association with Palau, and this is just a down payment on the initiatives to come in this important part of the world. In South Asia, we are strengthening our partnerships, particularly with India. Prime Minister Modi's remarks last evening underscored India's role as a leader and responsible steward in the Indo-Pacific region. The U.S. values the role India can play in regional and global security, and we view the U.S.-India relationship as a natural partnership between the world's two largest democracies based on a convergence of strategic interests, shared values, and respect for a rules-based international order. Our regional cooperation is growing in a range of areas consistent with these shared objectives. Our partnership extends beyond the Indo-Pacific region, and we welcome India's continued significant contributions to stability and reconstruction in Afghanistan. We are also increasing our engagement with other Pacific allies, such as the United Kingdom, France, and Canada, with whom we share enduring interests in the region. A generation from now, we will be judged on whether we successfully integrated rising powers while increasing economic prosperity, maintaining international cooperation based on agreed upon rules and norms, protecting fundamental rights of our peoples, and avoiding conflict. Our Indo-Pacific strategy informs our relationship with China. We are aware China will face an array of challenges and opportunities in coming years. We are prepared to support China's choices if they promote long-term peace and prosperity for all in this dynamic region. Yet China's policy in the South China Sea stands in stark contrast to the openness of our strategy. What our strategy promotes, it calls in to question China's broader goals. China's militarization of artificial features in the South China Sea includes the deployment of anti-ship missiles, surface-to-air missiles, electronic jammers, and more recently, the landing of bomber aircraft at Woody Island. Despite China's claims to the contrary, the placement of these weapon systems is tied directly to military use for the purposes of intimidation and coercion. China's militarization of the Spratlys is also in direct contradiction to President Xi's 2015 public assurances in the White House Rose Garden that they would not do this. For these reasons, and as initial response to China's continued militarization of the South China Sea, last week we disinvited the People's Liberation Army Navy from the 2018 Rim of the Pacific exercise, as China's behavior is inconsistent with the principles and the purposes of the RIMPAC exercise, the world's largest naval exercise, an exercise in which transparency and cooperation are hallmarks. To be clear, we do not ask any country to choose between the United States and China, because a friend does not demand you choose among them. China should and does have a voice in shaping the international system, and all of China's neighbors have a voice in shaping China's role. The U.S. will continue to pursue a constructive, results-oriented relationship with China. Cooperation, whenever possible, will be the name of the game, and competing vigorously where we must. Of course, we recognize any sustainable Indo-Pacific order has a role for China, and at China's invitation, I will travel to Beijing soon in our open, transparent approach to broadening and deepening the national dialogue between our two Pacific nations. I will end as I began. As a Pacific nation, the United States remains committed to building a shared destiny with this region. The U.S. offers strategic partnerships, not strategic dependence. Alongside our allies and partners, America remains committed to maintaining the region's security, its stability, and its economic prosperity, a view that transcends America's political transitions and will continue to enjoy Washington's strong bipartisan support. For as President Trump said in Da Nang, we will never ask our partners to surrender their sovereignty or intellectual property. We don't dream of domination. Working together on the basis of shared principles, we can create a future that provides peace, prosperity, and security for all. A constellation of nations, each in its own bright star, satellites to none. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I look forward to your questions.
They didn't put the Q&A up yet. So, but interesting, especially the point where he specifically calls out China. And so what you saw, and if you, and listening to the first part of his remarks, you know, he talked about last year, he came and he listened for the most part. And this year, he's here to make a statement. So, very interesting stuff. And so we'll see, because the United States has pivoted towards China. And again, the Chinese continue to play the emperor's new clothes, which is what? Nothing to see here, you know, we own the South China Sea. We own the South China Sea. You can't develop your economic resources that lay off the coast of your country without Chinese involvement. And so that's a game that gets played. And then he also spoke of China's coercive practices relative to their economy. You want access to China's markets, right? This is the way it's going to be. And so so it'll be very interesting as the United States, again, squares up on China and then I think seeks to use its relationship with India, its relationship with Vietnam, Australia, Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines, Vietnam, all Malaysia, all those nations, to put China on notice that you can't operate outside the international rule of law. And again, we're not talking about going to war, you know, the Chinese going to war with anybody. We're talking about their regular predatory practices in the region. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get India's perspective on all this. Their prime minister gave the keynote speak, and you heard Secretary Mattis allude to it before he spoke. So, more of All Marine Radio on Tuesday, doing educational stuff, coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
China, we're talking to you. Exactly. All right, I can't really say his first name, but I'll try. Narendra. Middle name is Damodarnas Modi. He's the 14th and current Prime Minister of India. Has held that position since 2014. So again, very interesting, the panel of speakers here at the Shangri-La Dialogue. And he gave the keynote speech, and so really what it highlights is India and China's confrontation that they dance around. So here he is in his own words. But those are the Beatles.
Honorable Prime Minister, ministers, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on. Let me skip the introduction. It goes on and on and on. All right, here's the last part of the introduction.
It had previously been an economic and trade-based policy to one aimed at nurturing political and security relationships. We look forward to what Prime Minister Narendra Modi has to say about India's foreign and security policy priorities in the Indo-Pacific region. Prime Minister, this podium and the floor is yours. Prime Minister.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, somebody sent me an email yesterday and said, Mac, you know, I had never even heard of the Shangri-La Dialogue before you had it on the air. Yeah, I should be embarrassed to say this, but I'm not. You know, I'd never heard of it either until, you know, I started following the Secretary of Defense and where he was speaking. And all of a sudden you on an annual basis, this forum for, Southeast Asia is huge with, you know, you have the German Minister of Defense, not really sure why they have one, but she goes to everything, right? Again, like, she's a freeloader. She seems like a nice woman, but she's a freeloader. I if I was her, I'd be like, God, can't we get our shit together here in Germany so I don't have to go there and answer the same questions? Why do you guys freeload off everybody? Anyway, here's the Prime Minister of India talking about security.
Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong, thank you for your friendship, your leadership of India-Singapore partnership, and a better future for the region. Defense Minister Mr. John Shipman, dignitaries and excellencies, Namaskar, and a very good evening to all of you. I am pleased to return to a region known to India since ancient times as Swarnabhumi, the land of gold. I am also happy to be here in a special year, in a landmark year of India's relationship with Asia. In January, we had the unique honor of hosting 10 ASEAN leaders on our Republic Day. The ASEAN-India Summit was a testimony of our commitment to ASEAN and our Act East policy. For thousands of years, Indians have turned to the east, not just to see the sunrise, but also to pray for its light, to spread over the entire world. The humankind now looks to the rising east with the hope to see the promise that this 21st century beholds for the whole world. Because the destiny of the world will be deeply influenced by the course of developments in the Indo-Pacific region. Because this new age of promise is also caught in shifting plates of global politics and the fault lines of history.
You know, it's really interesting because when you listen to this, it is a completely separate view of the world, right? That we, you know, our view is a Western power, right? Western power through Europe, Western power towards the Pacific. India's view is that that is all changing. And what will emerge will be from the East, both China and India, and it will redefine global relations.
I'm here to say that the future we seek does not have to be as elusive as Shangri-La, that we can shape this region in our collective hopes and aspirations. Nowhere is it more apt to pursue this than in Singapore. The great nation shows us that when the oceans are open, the seas are secure, countries are connected, the rule of law prevails.
Okay, now, in case, again, when the sea lanes are open, the rule of law prevails, who are we talking about there? We're talking about China. So, again, this is, I know, it might be dorky stuff, but to me it's very, very interesting because the fault lines of the world run through places like Iran, places like China, nations like Syria, and you're seeing major powers, right, begin to call out the Chinese in the Western Pacific for what they're doing. And he's one of them.
And the region is stable, nations small and large, prosper as sovereign countries, free and fearless in their choices. Singapore also shows that when nations stand on the side of principles, not behind one power or the other, they earn the respect of the world and a voice in international affairs. And when they embrace diversity at home, they seek an inclusive world outside. For India, though, Singapore means more. It's a spirit that unites a lion nation and a lion city. Singapore is our springboard to ASEAN. It has been for centuries a gateway for India to the East. For over 2,000 years, the winds of monsoons, the currents of seas, and the forces of human aspirations have built timeless links between India and this region. It was cast in peace and friendship, religion and culture, art and commerce, language and literature. These human links have lasted even as the tides of politics and trade saw their ebb and flow. Over the past 3 decades, we have reclaimed that heritage to restore our role and relationship in the region. For India, no region now receives as much attention as this. And for good reasons. Oceans had an important place in Indian thinking since pre-Vedic times. Thousands of years ago, the Indus Valley civilization, as well as Indian peninsula, had maritime trade. Oceans and Varuna, the lord of all waters, find a prominent place in the world's oldest book, the Vedas. In ancient Puranas, written thousands of years ago, the geographical definition of India is with reference to the seas. Uttaro yat samudrasya, meaning the land which lies to the north of the seas. Lothal, in my home state Gujarat, was among the world's oldest ports. Even today, there are remains of a dock. No wonder Gujaratis are enterprising and travel widely even today. The Indian Ocean has shaped much of India's history. It now holds the key to our future. The ocean carries 90% of India's trade and our energy sources. It is also the lifeline of global commerce. The Indian Ocean connects regions of diverse cultures and different levels of peace and prosperity. It also now bears ships of major powers. Both raise concerns of stability and contest. To the east, the Malacca Strait and South China Sea connect India to the Pacific and to most of our major partners, ASEAN, Japan, Republic of Korea, China, and the Americas. Our trade in the region is growing rapidly, and a significant part of our overseas investments flow in this direction. ASEAN alone accounts for over 20%. Our interests in the region are vast, and our engagement is deep. In the Indian Ocean region, our relationships are becoming stronger. We are also helping build economic capabilities and improve maritime security for our friends and partners. We promote collective security through forms like Indian Ocean Naval Symposium. We are advancing a comprehensive agenda of regional cooperation through Indian Ocean Rim Association. And we also work with partners beyond the Indian Ocean region to ensure that the global transit routes remain peaceful and free for all. 3 years ago in Mauritius.
You hear a theme in this, right? Free for all. And the significance of, you know, the Indian Ocean and the link between the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, which runs through the Malaccan Straits, which can run through the South China Sea, although there are other ways to get there, are critically important to nations like India. So it's interesting what, and you can see what the United States is attempting to do. What the United States is attempting to do is unify the countries of Southeast Asia with India, with the United States, with nations like Japan, to push back on China and saying you have to obey the rule of law.
I describe our vision in one word, Sagar, which means ocean in Hindi. And Sagar stands for security and growth for all in the region. And that is the creed we follow to our east. Now even more vigorously, through our at-least policy, by seeking a joint India, especially our east and northeast with our land and maritime partners to the east. Southeast Asia is our neighbor by land and sea. With each Southeast Asian country, we have growing political, economic and defense ties. With ASEAN, from dialogue partners, we have become strategic partners over the course of 25 years. We pursue our relations through annual summits and 30 dialogue mechanisms. But even more, through a shared vision for the region and the comfort and familiarity of our old links. We are active participants in Asia-led institutions like East Asia Summit, ADMM Plus, and ARF. We are part of BIMSTEC and Mekong Ganga Economic Corridor, a bridge between South and Southeast Asia. Our ties with Japan, from economic to strategic, have been completely transformed. It is a partnership of great substance and purpose that is cornerstone of India's Act East policy.
You know, this is awesome. Can you imagine being a Chinese sitting there listening to this going, oh, shit, here we go. Now we've got the Indians talking about their relationship with Japan, and we've got the Americans talking about, oh, my God. They didn't send some of the top military people. They sent some of their political policy people to this dialogue because they knew what was going to happen. But you can see how the picture is being painted. Pretty interesting.
There is a strong momentum in our cooperation with Republic of Korea. And there is a fresh energy in our partnership with Australia as also New Zealand. With several of our partners, we meet in formats of three or more. More than 3 years ago, I landed at dawn in Fiji to start a successful new phase of engagement with Pacific Island nations. The meetings of the Forum of India Pacific Islands Cooperation, FIPIC, have bridged the distance of geography through shared interest and action. Beyond East and Southeast Asia, our partnerships are strong and growing. It is a measure of our strategic autonomy that India's strategic partnership with Russia has matured to be special and privileged.
Russia? Really? What the hell?
10 days ago, in an informal summit at Sochi, President Putin and I shared views on the need for a strong multipolar world order for dealing with the challenges of our times. At the same time, India's global strategic partnership with the United States has overcome the hesitation of history and continues to deepen across the extraordinary breadth of our relationship. It has assumed new significance in the changing world. And an important pillar of this partnership is our shared vision of an open, stable, secure, and prosperous Indo-Pacific region.
Again, open, stable, prosperous. Take another stick in your eye, China.
No other relationship of India has as many layers as our relations with China. We are the world's two most populous countries and among the fastest growing major economies. Our cooperation is expanding, trade is growing, and we have displayed maturity and wisdom in managing issues and ensuring a peaceful border. In April, a two-day informal summit with President Xi helped us cement our understanding that strong and stable relations between our two nations are an important factor for global peace and progress. I firmly believe that Asia and the world will have a better future when India and China work together in trust and confidence, sensitive to each other's interests. India has a growing partnership with Africa, propelled through mechanisms such as India-Africa Forum Summits. At its core, our cooperation based on Africa's requirements and a history of warmth and mutual respect. Friends, coming back to our region, India's growing engagement is accompanied by deeper economic and defense cooperation. We have more trade agreements in this part of the world than any in other. We have comprehensive economic partnership agreement with Singapore, Japan, and South Korea. We have free trade agreements with ASEAN and Thailand. And we are now actively participating in concluding the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement. I have just paid my first visit to Indonesia, India's neighbor, 90 nautical miles close and not 90 nautical miles apart. My friend, President Widodo, and I upgraded India-Indonesia relations to a comprehensive strategic partnership. Among other shared interests, we have a common vision for maritime cooperation in the Indo-Pacific. On way from Indonesia, I stopped over briefly in Malaysia to meet one of ASEAN's most senior leaders, Prime Minister Mahathir. Friends, India Armed Forces, especially our Navy, are building partnership in the Indo-Pacific region for peace and security, as well as humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. They train, exercise, and conduct goodwill missions across the region. For example, with Singapore, we have the longest uninterrupted naval exercise, which is in its 25th year now. We will start a new trilateral exercise with Singapore soon, and we hope to extend it to other ASEAN countries. We work with partners like Vietnam and build mutual capabilities. India conducts Malabar exercise with the United States and Japan. A number of regional partners join in India's exercise Milan in the Indian Ocean and participate in RIMPAC in the Pacific. We are active in the regional cooperation agreement on combating piracy and armed robbery against ships in Asia in this very city. This thing with members of the audience, back home our principal mission is transforming India to a new India by 2022, when independent India will be 75 years young. We will sustain growth of 7.5% to 8% per year. As our economy grows, our global and regional integration will increase. A nation of over 800 million youth knows that their future will be secured not just by the scale of India's economy, but also by the depth of global engagement. More than anywhere else, our ties will deepen and our presence will grow in the region. But the future we seek to build needs a stable bedrock of peace. And this is far from certain. There are shifts in global power, change in the character of global economy, and daily disruption in technology. The foundations of the global order appear shaken, and the future looks less certain. For all our progress, we live on the edge of uncertainty, of unsettled questions and unresolved disputes. Contents and claims and clashing visions and competing models. We see growing mutual insecurity and rising military expenditure. Internal dislocations turning into external tensions and new fault lines in trade and competition in the global commons. Above all, we see accession of power over recourse to international norms. In the midst of all this, there are challenges that touch us all, including the unending threat of terrorism and extremism. This is a world of interdependent fortunes and failures, and no nation can shape and secure it on its own. It is a world that summons us to rise above divisions and competition to work together. Is it that possible? Yes, it is possible. I see ASEAN as an example and inspiration. ASEAN represents the greatest level of diversity of culture, religion, language, governance, and prosperity of any grouping in the world. It was born when Southeast Asia was a front line of global competition, a theater of a brutal war, and a region of uncertain nations. Yet, today, ASEAN has united 10 countries behind a common purpose. ASEAN unity is essential for a stable future of this region, and each of us must support it, not weaken it. I have attended 4 East Asia summits. I am convinced that ASEAN can integrate the broader region. In many ways, ASEAN is already leading the process. In doing so, it has laid the foundation of the Indo-Pacific region. The East Asia Summit and the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, 2 important initiatives of ASEAN, embrace this geography. Friends, the Indo-Pacific is a natural region. It is also home to a vast array of global opportunities and challenges. I am increasingly convinced with each passing day that the destinies of those of us who live in the region are linked. Today, we are being called to rise above divisions and competition to work together. The 10 countries of Southeast Asia connect the two great oceans in both the geographical and civilizational sense. Inclusiveness, openness, and ASEAN centrality and unity, therefore, lie at the heart of the new Indo-Pacific. India does not see the Indo-Pacific region as a strategy or as a club of limited members, nor as a grouping that seeks to dominate. And by no means do we consider it as directed against any country. A geographical definition as such cannot be. India's vision for the Indo-Pacific region is therefore a positive one, and it has many elements. The one, it stands for a free, open, inclusive region which embraces us all in a common pursuit of progress and prosperity. It includes all nations in this geography, as also others beyond who have a stake in it. Two, Southeast Asia is at its center, and ASEAN has been and will be central to its future. That is the vision that will always guide India as we seek to cooperate for an architecture for peace and security in this region. The three, we believe that our common prosperity and security require us to evolve through dialogue, a common rule-based order for the region, and it must equally apply to all individually as well as to the global commons. Such an order must believe in sovereignty and territorial integrity as well as equality of all nations, irrespective of size and strength. These rules and norms should be based on the consent of all, not on the power of the few. This must be based on faith in dialogue and not dependence on force. It also means that when nations make international commitments, they must uphold them. This is the foundation of India's faith in multilateralism and regionalism and of our principal commitment to rule of law. Four, we should all have equal access as a right under the international law to the use of common spaces on the sea and in the air. That would require freedom of navigation, unimpeded commerce, and peaceful settlement of disputes in accordance with international law. When we all agree to live by that code, our sea lanes will be pathways to prosperity and corridors of peace. We will also be able to come together to prevent maritime crimes, preserve marine ecology, protest against disasters, and prosper from blue economy. The five, this region and all of us have benefited from globalization. Indian food is among the best example of these benefits. But there is growing protectionism in goods and in services. Solutions cannot be found behind walls of protection, but in embracing change. What we seek is a level playing field for all. India stands for open and stable international trade regime. We will also support rule-based, open, balanced, and stable trade environment in the Indo-Pacific region, which lifts up all nations on the tide of trade and investment. That is what we expect from regional comprehensive economic partnership. RCEP must be comprehensive, as the name suggests, and the principles declared. It must have a balance among trade, investment and services. The sixth, connectivity is vital. It does more than enhance trade and prosperity. It unites a region. India has been at the crossroads for centuries. We understand the benefits of connectivity. There are many connectivity initiatives in the region. If these have to succeed, we must not only build infrastructure, we must also build bridges of trust. And for that, these initiatives must be based on respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity. Consultation, good governance, transparency, viability and sustainability. They must empower nations, not place them under impossible debt burden. They must promote trade, not strategic competition. On these principles, we are prepared to work with everyone. India is doing its part by itself and in partnership with others like Japan, in South Asia and Southeast Asia. In the Indian Ocean, Africa, West Asia and beyond. And we are important stakeholders in New Development Bank and the ASEAN Infrastructure Investment Bank. Finally, all of this is possible if we do not return to the age of great power rivalries. I have said this before. Asia of rivalry will hold us all back. Asia of cooperation will shape this century. So each nation must ask itself, are its choice building a more united world or forcing new divisions? It is a responsibility that both existing and rising powers have. Competition is normal, but contents must not turn into conflicts. Differences must not be allowed to become disputes. Distinguished members of this audience, it is normal to have partnership on the basis of shared values and interests. India too has many in the region and beyond. We will work with them individually or in formats of three or more for stable and peaceful region. But our friendships are not alliance of containment. We choose the side of principles and values of peace and progress, not one side for divide or the other. Our relationship across the world speak for our position. And when we can work together, we will be able to meet the real challenges of our times. We will be able to protect our planet. We will be able to ensure non-proliferation. We will be able to secure our people from terrorism and cyber threats. In conclusion, let me say this again. India's own engagement in the Indo-Pacific region, from the shore of Africa to that of the Americas, will be inclusive. We are inheritors of Vedant philosophy that believes in essential oneness of all and celebrates unity in diversity. Ekam satya vipraha baudha vadanti. Truth is one. The learned speaks of it in many ways. That is the foundation of our civilization ethos of pluralism, coexistence, openness and dialogue. The ideals of democracy that define us as a nation also save the way we engage the world. So, it translates into five S in Hindi. Samman, respect. Samvad, dialogue. Sahyog, cooperation. Shanti, peace. And Samruddhi, prosperity. It is easy to learn these words. So, we will engage with the world in peace, with respect, through dialogue and absolute commitment to international law. We will promote a democratic and rule-based international order in which all nations, small and large, thrive as equal and sovereign. We will work with others to keep our seas, space and airways free and open. Our nation secure from terrorism and our cyberspace free from disruption and conflict. We will keep our economy open and our engagement transparent. We will share our resources, markets and prosperity with our friends and partners. We will seek a sustainable future for our planet and through the new International Solar Alliance together with France and other partners. This is how we wish ourselves and our partners to proceed in this vast region and beyond. The ancient wisdom of the region is our common heritage. Lord Buddha's message of peace and compassion has connected us all. Together, we have contributed much to human civilization. And we have been through the devastation of war and the hope of peace. We have seen the limits of power, and we have seen the fruits of cooperation. This world is at a crossroad. There are temptations of the worst lessons of history, but there is also a path of wisdom. It summons us to a higher purpose. It rises about a narrow view of our interests and recognizes that each of us can serve our interests better when we work together. As equals in the larger good of all nations, I am here to urge all to take this path. Thank you. Thank you for this invitation. Thanks a lot.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Paul Soldier's going to join us. Mike Musselman's going to join us as we continue. Very interesting. Is India not a small player in the region? And the United States, under the leadership, really, of Secretary of Defense Mattis in the region, and Secretary Pompeo obviously new to the game, but I'm sure he'll get up to snuff quickly. Pretty impressive. So sit back. We'll take a break. On the backside of the break, Mike Musselman and Paul Soldris will join us as we get into Hour 3 on a Tuesday of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.